This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome back. Well, I say welcome back. This is our first dedicated live preview ahead of our trip to Norfolk. I say our. Going to get that in there early.
Hang on, sorry. Do you live in Norwich?
Yeah.
You never mentioned it.
Obviously, Plymouth Argyle travel east to take on David Wagner's Norwich City at Fortress Carrow Road for the first time since 2009. Be sure to like, subscribe, share and all that good stuff. Get your score predictions in the comments and your questions in the comments below. Joining me tonight, I have three of these lined up, so I'm going to switch these up. The Delia Smith to my Mark Attanasio, Finlay Allen.
Hello.
How's that?
Yeah, good. Good to be back.
Good. And the Liz Truss to my Ed Balls, John Allsop. How's things?
I should be offended by that, but I actually was fearing that you were going to compare me to Stuart Webb. Based on the way the first one went, so I'll take Liz Truss.
Yeah, no, maybe best to stay away from those comparisons. Anyway, there is an interview with a Norfolk-based journalist, Adam, from the EDP's Pinken, coming up soon too. So that's well timed. John, as you're prepped and you're off mute, just you know, the standard initial question that I give you. What are you thinking ahead of this one? Are you more excited for the game or to stay on my sofa?
Probably, genuinely to stay on your sofa, actually. For those who don't know, Aaron actually lives in Norwich, which he's never mentioned. So I will be crashing with him because the rail replacement bus is out in full force over Easter weekend, as it always seems to be on weekends, as Aaron, who lives in Norwich but never mentions it, knows from going from Norwich to away games and having been on that same rail replacement bus or a similar one to Ipswich away two of the three times that we've gone there in the last few seasons, I can't be asked to do it again and have decided to staying with Aaron chip that I earned from him staying on my air mattress on a previous couple of occasions. I'm excited for that. Norwich is a very nice place. Been there once before, not for football. So it'll be a first time Carrow Road trip for me, which I'm also very excited about. I think, while they're a bit of a tin pot club, it's certainly, in the Premier League scheme of things, I think that, it's one of the away games that I was really looking forward to, when the fixtures came out at the beginning of the season, one of the new grounds that I haven't been to that I was really like, that looks like it's kind of a fun time and it kind of has its own, it's one of those grounds that's not exactly like a kind of out of town, soulless plastic bowl Coventry cough. I've been looking forward to it for a long time and to sort of actually seriously answer your question with the looking forward more to staying on your sofa part of it, I think I actually just have got myself into the mindset of having a nice Easter weekend rather than waiting for or expecting anything on the football front. That being said, I guess it wouldn't like totally surprise me if we sort of played all right and lost 2-0, that kind of thing, rather than getting an absolute pasting. Obviously, things are not going well at the moment. We've discussed that at length. And I'm sure, of anyone on here, Finn will be the only one to defend the manager on the broadcast tonight, as I'm sure he'll get on to doing in a bit. Because he is a big fan of the imposter. But I think that it's not like we've been getting absolutely pasted every single week. I think there has been some defensive improvement under him. Obviously by far the bigger issue has been going forward in recent weeks. And while we've sort of played the better sides in the league, mostly at home, we have sort of lost those games. Obviously West Brom was 3-0, but sort of 2-0 to Leeds, 2-0 to Ipswich. And I don't think Norwich are necessarily better than that type of team. Obviously, they're on an absolutely fantastic run at the moment, having had a bit of a sort of up and down first half of the season. But yeah, I don't think it's one of those where I'm expecting us to go there and get absolutely hammered. I think we'll be in the game, but I would be very surprised if we got anything. Would be absolutely ecstatic if we got a point, you know, completely over the moon and gobsmacked if we actually won the game. Obviously, they've got an enormous amount of talent. And yeah, while we really did them over at Home Park earlier in the season, that was a case of it really all coming together for us in a game where we were obviously playing a lot more fluid attacking football than we've seen in recent weeks. Plus, again, up against the Norwich side, who are in a really rich vein of form at the moment. Although, I think when we played them earlier in the season, actually, it's easy to forget they were sixth at the time, I believe. I know it was very early days, but they had actually had a pretty good start, even though the narrative around the Wagner tenure was not, even at that point, particularly positive. But I think at the moment, you know, even though they're not much, you know, not higher than that, it's just the way they're playing that's been particularly scary and impressive in recent weeks. It sort of looks like the kind of midfield luxury players that they have really clicked. Got Josh Sargent back and Ashley Barnes back, I think, too, you know, who both missed the trip to Home Park, who are obviously very dangerous players at this level in front of goal. So, yeah, I think it'll be a long afternoon. I think we'll be on the back foot for much of it. But like I said, I'm not necessarily expecting to lose 6-7, 8-0. I think it'll be a game that we'll be in. But yes, not one that I'm really holding out any hope that we'll actually get something from.
Yeah, Finn, I've done absolutely no prep for this. So just follow that.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, John's right in saying, like, the discontent under Foster isn't necessarily that we've been losing the games, you know, apart from Sheffield Wednesday, which is the big sore thumb that really sticks out that we should have got something out of. The games that we've lost are on paper aren't necessarily games that you said we should be winning. You know, they've mostly been tough games. However, I think it's the lack of looking like scoring when we do go behind. So whilst there has been defensive improvements, then it doesn't matter really, because if you know, we know our defence, you know, even if there is defensive improvement, our defence is far from the best, you know, out there anyway. So if we concede and then we don't look like scoring, doesn't matter if, like, ultimately, other than goal difference, which does come into play admittedly at this time in the season, but you lose 1-0 and you lose 6-0, it's the same result, right? So I don't really, like, you know...
It's not the same result. Well, same amount of points.
Same amount of points, same result in terms of what you come out of the game with. You know, so I think I'm not feeling too confident about this game. And that's not just because of the sort of downbeat feeling around the fan base at the moment. But I mean, I think Norwich have not lost a home game in 2024, if I'm right about that. So we need something, and if it was my choice, Ian Foster would have gone last week, but he's still here. So we need to get behind the manager and hope that we can just get something out of this game, even though, you know, Norwich are on a terrific run of form and we're not. You know, it could be one of those games where we're not expecting to get anything, and it sort of rallies our season a bit, and we finish strongly. I'm sure we'd all like that. But yeah, I'm not feeling too confident. I don't think it will be a pasting, but I also am not confident that we're going to see any sort of upturn in our attacking output, at least.
Just quickly, if I may, I don't think we need something out of this game. I think we need something out of Bristol City, QPR, Rotherham, Millwall, Stoke, which is 5 of 8 games that are left, where you're playing teams who are not in the best of nicks necessarily. I mean, QPR are in very good form, obviously coming from quite a low starting point. Definitely not a team that we should consider to be one that, you know, would be lucky to get a draw against. You know, I don't think this is one where we need anything. I'd probably go as far as to say this is our hardest game left on paper, potentially.
Yeah.
I know we've got Leicester at home, but Leicester are in a bit of a weird form at the moment where they're sort of dropping quite a lot of points to random teams. And also we're at home, which, you know, until the last few weeks was something we considered to be an advantage. So, yeah, I don't know if this is, I don't know if I would say this is our most difficult game that's left, but I think it's certainly in the top two, if not the most difficult, given how good they look at the moment. So I really don't think we need anything from it. Obviously, it'd be lovely to get something, but this is not one where I've got, you know, I've got a kind of, you know, points on the counter in terms of where we're going to pick them up between now and
then. I agree. I definitely agree with that. Sorry, I should probably have phrased it better. I'm not saying we need in terms of our season, but in terms of the confidence it would give us going forward. Because, you know, all of those, like you said, five out of those eight games are you know, going to be tight, scrappy. I feel like if we can get something in a game that we're not expecting to get anything out of, it might take some pressure off one or two of the games that we, I mean, because realistically, no matter if we like think we're going to, you know, think we should be winning, you know, against, you know, Stoke, Millwall, whatever, we're not going to win all of the games, you know, just that's probably just not going to happen. So, nor does it need to happen, but, you know, I think it would just take a little bit of pressure off. And you know, because if we don't get anything out of this game, then the mood going into Bristol City, I mean, we go 1-0 down there. I mean, I know I'm talking into the future now, but that could turn sour quite quickly, I would think. So this would be quite big, I think. Not imperative, but big going forward if we could get something out of this game.
Yeah, certainly.
It's one of those, but
I certainly agree. Sorry, I certainly agree it would be big. If we could get something, obviously that would be incredible. But I also think that the effect you're talking about could be, you know, could be a sort of function of performance as well. Like, if we go there and lose 6-0, clearly that's going to be absolutely horrible for confidence, and the toxicity is going to really surge ahead of the Bristol City game. If we go there and lose 1-0, I mean, it sort of depends how, right? Like, you could go there and lose 1-0 and put up a great fight and think that was a lot more like it, or you could go get battered, not offer anything going forward, and they only just score one goal and win, which would probably maybe reinforce some of the broader concerns people have about Foster's style. You know, if we're going to lose, I know you said it's the same amount of points or even the same result as Finn said, if you lose 6-0 or 1-0, but if you can go there and if we are going to lose, you know, lose 4-3 or 5-3 or 3-2 or something like that, just something that maybe shows, you know, that we actually can score goals, that we actually have remembered how to go forward, that we actually are willing to take the game's teams. I think even that would be potentially a confidence boost, even if the end outcome is no points. I think we all took quite a lot of confidence away from Ipswich away in back under Schumacher in October, where obviously played a team that were at the time, I think, second or even top of the league, and at times played them off the park, scored two goals, were very, very unlucky for various reasons. You know, that was a defeat, and I was livid afterwards, of course, but because of the way it went down. But, you know, something like that where you show you can kind of mix it with and take the game to a really, really good side on their turf. I almost like think, and this is really not the case with almost any of the games that are left, but just this one and maybe Leicester, like the performance is as important as the result, or could even be more important depending on how things go down.
Yeah, for me, I think it's just about wanting to see a bit of a reaction. I think you mentioned there, John, obviously the Ipswich game. Somebody put it on Twitter, and I can't remember who, but they were saying about how under Schumacher, even though we hadn't won away, we went into games very confident, feeling like we were going to at least pick up a result. Whereas under Foster, we've obviously picked up better results away, but, you know, the feeling of actually going and getting a win just isn't there. You know, if we were going to Norwich under Schumacher, I feel like we'd be confident of maybe getting a draw. Ian Foster.
I've said this before. I think this is a bit revisionist history in remembering the away form under Schumacher a little too kindly. Like, obviously, you know, love everything the bloke did for the club, and I'm not massively holding it against him that we didn't win away under his tenure, given how good the home form was. But I remember quite a number of away games where we came away very frustrated with how we played and mistakes that we made. Ipswich was one where that wasn't the case, and we had a really good go. But, like, I do also remember Leeds, where until we sort of rallied later on, we didn't really show a lot at all. Coventry, which was awful. I don't necessarily think I'd be feeling a lot more confident going into Friday's game.
But we went into those games. We went into those games.
Well, you left them.
Okay, fine. fine. All right. I thought collectively as a fan base, we went into every away game thinking this is going to be the one, this is going to be our first away win. And we were confident of it. And it was always individual mistakes that ruined that.
Wasn't that Sam who said that? No. Sam confidently said we're winning today quite a few times. Not every week, to be fair. Yeah, but obviously you win any which way on Friday, don't you, Aaron? Because you live in Norwich, as you've never
mentioned. Exactly. It's a win-win. It's a win-win for me. As you mentioned, John, I do live in Norwich. Obviously, Ian Foster has survived the international break and remains at the helm of Argo. You've both touched on it briefly there, but is that it now? Do we just drop all our concerns and just get behind him for the last eight games? Because
No.
Okay. No.
Because if we go and lose the next two games, that is then what would that be? Someone better with stats, would that be something like no wins in six or something?
Oh yeah.
I mean, ultimately, yeah, we don't want to get relegated from this division. So if I am one of Foster's harsher critics, but regardless of what you think about him, we need results because we need to stay in this division. So if we can't get results under him, then we need to change it, right?
Yeah, I think it just prolongs the uncertainty, to be honest. I think there was obviously a sense among many of us that if there was going to be a change made before the end of the season, this was the appropriate time to do it because it was an international break. You would give time for all of that to be worked out contractually or whatever was required, and then you'd give whoever the new person was, or whether it was Juuse Nipponenskyville or someone coming from outside like Neil Warnock maybe, you'd give them a bit more time on the grass with the players. But I think, as Foster himself pointed out after the Preston game, it's not like you get sort of 2 weeks of unadulterated training. I think the players had a week off, so actually really it's in terms of training time, it's more like the difference between a normal Saturday fixture load rather than a sort of 2 week break. Obviously you get the benefit of the extra rest, which I think is very important for us. I think if the next two games, three games go really badly and the performances are terrible and the results are terrible, that, it's absolutely not too late to make a change. In theory, I sincerely believe we could lose every game up until Stoke away three games from the end and then win three in a row and stay up with 50 points. That is very much possible, I think, given how awful some of the teams down there look. I mean, 50 points actually in historical perspective would be quite a lot to need to stay up anyway. Just because we're only 2 points above it now doesn't mean we can't go on a losing run and then pull ourselves out of it right at the end. We absolutely could do that. So even if it got to that kind of last minute, I don't think we should rule out the idea of making a change if it seems like the right thing to do. I got to the point where I was, comfortable with the idea of replacing Foster after the last game. But I did also say, I wasn't on the Preston pod because I didn't go to the game, but I did also say privately to you guys and others that I didn't think it was really fair particularly, and it wasn't necessarily a reflection on how I generally would approach, manager merry-go-round stuff. It just feels like the atmosphere is so bad with him, particularly for reasons that aren't just about the football. And also, the league is so tight, which is not really exactly his fault, that it just sort of seemed maybe it was getting to a position where it was already untenable. There is a case to be made, and I don't necessarily believe what I'm about to say, but I also don't think it's insane to say it. It could just be we were on a bad run, players got stuck in a rut, no confidence, and were tired after, playing, in fairness, what was a pretty ridiculous load of fixtures, Tuesday, Saturday, a lot of the time, against some really, really good sides. And it could be that, it could be that these players come back from international break recharged, that something's happened on the training ground this week, that they have sort of seen the light and tried to tinker with things, that Foster has finally got an opportunity to sort of have a couple of weeks to get his feet under the desk rather than just be very reactive to things. All of these things could be the case, and we could go on a good run. Now, I think that's possible. Do I think it's likely? But, based on the atmosphere that seems to be kind of percolating around the club at the moment and how we've played recently, no, I don't think it's particularly likely. But I don't think it's impossible. It's not like Foster's overseen a run of, Cisco Munoz at Sheffield Wednesday at the beginning of the season where they were just absolutely hopeless, right? It's not that bad. So, I think while this would seem like a natural breakpoint in the season to do something, At the same time, it doesn't really, I don't think anything's really changed. I think we're just kind of in stasis from where we were after the Preston game. And that means that all kind of possible futures and all options are still on the table as far as I see it. Still got eight games is still a lot of games at this level when you potentially really only need to win three or four of them. So jury's out, I think, still.
A couple of questions in the comments, John, about how do you like your waffles?
Actually, don't like waffles. More of a pancake or crepe fan. But I like my crepe. Very chocolatey.
Right. Okay. Anyway, we said this was going to be a nice short one. Obviously, two players that won't feature at Carrow Road. Obviously, Darko JB has been sent back to Leeds, and we'll get onto we might get onto Ballymun, but not really much point talking about him. Obviously, Darko JB has been ruled out for the next 6 weeks through injury, and will now return to his parent club, Leeds United, for treatment. He suffered a groin strain in training. The England under 20 international joined the club in January and made 10 appearances, assisting once, as well as winning the Argyle CT1 Argyle Player of the Month award for February. That's good then. What do we make of JB's spell with us, Finn? Obviously brilliant up at Middlesbrough, but, you know, bright sparks in certain games, but I don't think we really saw the best of him.
Yeah, I mean, I think John has a slightly different opinion on this to me, and in fact, probably you as well. I don't think he showed that he was consistently championship quality. I think he had some very good spells in games, and he had one particularly very good game against Middlesbrough where he was the star player. But I would say that was credit to him, but also everyone pretty much had a good game that day, and that's the real outlier in the sort of that and Cardiff, if you want to say that. But there's real outlier in Foster's era, that game where that gives you a bit of hope. But in general, I felt he was quite sloppy at times, and I don't really see what he brought to the team. I did when he played further forward against Middlesbrough, but generally he didn't play there. So I don't really see what he brought to the team, which Randall or Houghton didn't, to be honest with you. And in terms of like squad depth and stuff, yeah, of course, that's a worry. But in terms of the player itself, I don't think it's like a sort of we're doomed moment, far from it kind of thing. But I wish him all the best, and he was a decent, like, didn't have a bad loan spell here by any means, but just didn't pull up any trees for me.
Yeah, I think he's one of those we're going to look back on in a few years' time and just one that, like, think, oh, we had him. Didn't show any of that quality of us, but as you say, wish him well. John, Finn touched on it there. You sort of disagreed in the group chat when I was talking about it maybe being a loan, just a league too high too soon. Like, he would have been perfect at like a mid-table playoff pushing League One side rather than coming in.
Yeah, I don't totally disagree with Finn in the sense that I don't think this is a mortal blow for the rest of the season either. And I also don't think he pulled up massive trees. I mean, pulling up trees would be doing what Morgan Whittaker did on loan last season, or Finn Azaz this season, right? And obviously, I don't think his impact was that immense. But I probably have a more favourable view on the whole than you two. I thought he was really good quite a lot of the time, even in some of the sort of weaker performances. I felt that it wasn't really him who was the one who let the side down. I felt he carried the ball forward very well. I mean, I think for such a young player, he's got an immense amount of quality and also, you know, just a lot of composure, really. That being said, obviously, because he's a young player, there are elements in his game that need to be worked on. He would occasionally be anonymous, kind of go missing. Again, I don't think it was really ever him in isolation that did that, but I'm not sure he, you know, like an Azaz or a Whittaker was someone who was kind of able to pick the rest of the team up by the scruff of the neck. But then again, I don't necessarily think that is, you know, the standard that you should expect of a loan player. Most of them are not going to be that good. And I thought, as Finn said, he didn't have a bad loan spell at all. As for whether it was a league too high at this point in his career, maybe. I mean, like, it might have benefited him to go to, you know, a club that was sort of in the position we were in last season in League One and sort of be part of a more upwardly mobile project. I'm not sure at this stage of his career if he looks like a player who's really the most sort of useful player to have in a relegation scrap. And I think going forward, I probably wouldn't have started him, certainly not in that midfield two and probably not in the two behind the striker either until the end of the season. But that being said, I think, you know, it's clearly a shame that we've lost him in terms of just squad depth. I think he did have a bit of quality as well and would have been a useful asset and option to have. I would also just say quickly, I think it probably didn't help that we didn't really seem to know what his best position was, right? Like, he was expected to sometimes play in that midfield too and sometimes play in behind the striker, which are roles in our system or any system that, you know, require quite different attributes. And for a player of his age, it probably didn't help. You know, who's not played a lot of first-team football, it probably didn't help to come down and be expected to perform those different roles rather than just focus on...
But on that, John, he did play under Foster for the under-20s. Surely he should have known what his best
position is. Yeah, I'm not blaming JB for that at all. You know, it rests with the management. I felt we used him a bit aimlessly. But I think he's... Like I said, he could have maybe benefited from going into an upper-end League One club and imposing himself a bit more. But I don't think that means that he's not good enough for this league. Like, I think he, you know, I think he showed, certainly in flashes, that he is good enough. And I, for one, would be quite happy to see him back at some point, if that is possible.
Yeah, just on a couple of things that Carl has said. Carl, Blue Tack is a brand. So most probably Blue Tack. And also you mentioned earlier on Jay Matete, who's... been sent back to Sunderland today for treatment on a knee injury. So very similar to JB in that regard. Shall I chuck in my interview? Is this the best time?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Delighted to be joined by Adam, a Norfolk-based journalist covering all things Norwich City. How are things?
Yeah, all good, mate. All good. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to the football return, and these international breaks are always a bit of a difficult kind of time to navigate. So, big game on Friday, of course.
Yeah, a big one. A big one personally. Our listeners will know where I'm based, so they'll know that this is a big one for me and bragging rights in the city. I had to get right onto it and mention that 6-2 win for Argyle, obviously, earlier in the season as Norwich visited Home Park. What will be the key differences in this Norwich side now that they've found their feet?
Yeah, I think that was kind of a real downward spiral for Norwich, to kind of the start of it almost. They'd had a really positive start to the campaign. That game kind of encapsulated, I suppose, everything that was so poor about this Norwich side around the October and November side time. But it was a side that didn't have Josh Sargent, who is so crucial to this system and the way Norwich play. Without him, they're a much worse side. It is pressing, and you can see a sort of goal record ever since he's returned to the side, since sort of the start of January time. And it's coincided with this upturn in form, and it's meant we kind of are where I think most Norwich fans felt we would be, kind of just sneaking into that sort of top six mix come the end of the campaign. It's probably a sort of, I suppose, an expectation that Norwich are in and around that sort of area of a table. So, that's probably the key difference. I'm expecting this Norwich side to show you probably what they are capable of compared to that day where they just capitulated and kind of the mentality of that squad was very weak. It feels like maybe now they've kind of got that hoodoo over them and they're sort of back to the Norwich side that we all know and love.
Yeah, I mean, you've already mentioned it. You've done what the guys on our pod do and preempt the next question. Obviously, one key difference is obviously the man leading the line. Obviously, Adam Eder is off in Scotland, isn't he? He's at the Celtic on loan now. So, you know, and you've got Josh Sargent back. So some arguing that he is the best striker in the Championship. How much credibility are you giving that debate?
Yeah, I think there's definitely got to be an argument for him in that sort of situation. If you look at kind of the goals versus minutes ratio, I think he's top of that metric. But for me, it's probably more what he is as a striker. I don't think there's many more complete strikers of his age profile in the Championship. You know, number nines are a pretty scarce commodity these days, I'd say. And he's probably the one that maybe, given, I say, kind of the profile that he is, I think there'll be a lot of Premier League clubs sniffing for his signature come the summer if Norwich aren't back where they want to be in the Premier League. Because when he arrived, he was sort of a young lad and he lacked confidence. I know anyone that kind of watched him in that Premier League era with us would have realised, you know, he had maybe the quality needed, but his confidence wasn't there. He wasn't developed enough. But this kind of drop to the Championship in the last couple of seasons has really helped him kind of kick on, I'd say. And he's now probably the striker that I thought he would be.
Yeah, who else will the Premier League come calling for? Who are the main men in that side? Obviously, Gabriel Sara is the main one that stands out for me.
Yeah, it's funny because if you go back to kind of the, you know, this reverse game that we had at Home Park, I probably couldn't have named you many players that were capable of or deserving of a Premier League position. But since the kind of the turn of the year, I could pick you quite a few now. I think Angus Gunn in goal is a really top quality goalkeeper. Of course, he's got the links to Norwich through his father, a club legend, Brian Gunn, of course. And he's a really top goalkeeper, a man, of course, who had time in the Premier League with Southampton. Didn't really work, but he's kind of developed a lot now. And he's a Scottish international, kind of their number one goalkeeper. And I think he's a man who will be in demand this summer. He's out of contract in 2025, so only a year left. That feels like a one to keep your eye on. But yeah, Gabriel Zara, he's it's almost a bit of a joke how good he is. 21 goal contributions from midfield, particularly given that he's played deeper, sort of in a deeper playmaker role for lots of this season, maybe more than the advanced number 10 role that Norwich fans hope he would play. His ability is, I think he's up there with sort of one of the best individual players I've seen, certainly in my time. There's plenty to kind of compare him to. Emi Buendia, James Maddison, I could go on, but I think he's in that elite caliber of player. And the other one, I suppose, is Jonathan Rowe, who's going to be out injured for Friday's game.
Thank God.
Yeah, he's of course had a bit of a breakout season, 12 goals in the Championship, been injured now for a month or two. But he's a player that when he sort of broke on the scene in the Premier League, you could see he was a good player, but he didn't kind of look physically big enough. He's developed a lot sort of in terms of his time out, where he had a really bad injury last season as well that kept him out pretty much all the campaign. So this is kind of his first season really in senior football. And I think he will be rewarded with Premier League interest. Hopefully for us, you know, we can hope that he can be back involved come sort of the last games of the season, I suppose.
Yeah, I managed to watch him against Olympiacos in pre-season and he looked phenomenal that day. And that was just... there's just some players you just know. There's just something about them in there. It was him, Morgan Whittaker and Jack Clark were the main three interested in parties in January, weren't they? So, yep. So I can imagine at least two of those will get a move in the summer. I need to ask you about David Wagner then. Obviously, he's managed to turn around the fan base quite spectacularly after calls for his head earlier in the season. I think we find ourselves in a similar situation where the fans aren't at all happy with the style of football being served up under Ian Foster. What's changed on the pitch, or is it something off it? Like, what's happened?
Yeah, I mean, he obviously arrived last season, had a really great start, kind of got us off to where we all thought we could be, pushing towards the top six. That fell off pretty drastically at the end of last campaign, just one win in 11, and then it felt like he needed a quick start. He got that. And then if we had this sort of really, say, this lapse of form I mentioned earlier on in sort of the October, November period, and he had a lot of injuries then. So I think there was a few mitigation, you know, for him, but the sort of the quality drop off, I suppose, like in any team in the Championship, once you take the sort of star in 11 out of the squad and you sort of replace them with the options on the bench, the quality level isn't probably quite the same. So I think there was mitigation, but the style of football, the brand of football was pretty poor. It was very defensive, trying to get results in games, just trying to, you know, basically keep himself alive in a job. I'd say the sort of switch of sporting director probably helped him a little bit. Ben Napper arriving from Arsenal, who kind of just wanted to get his feet under the table and wanted a bit of time to assess kind of the management, I suppose, and the players that he was going to be inheriting. And David Wagner has kind of been the beneficiary of that, because ever since then, these players have returned. He's got them playing in the system that we know has worked previously for him at Huddersfield and sort of in his sort of peak time, I suppose, in terms of Norwich and the form. So, yeah, to his credit, I'd give him that he's never really snapped at fans. He's always conducted himself in a professional manner. And I think that's probably what's bought him the time from the board and the fan base. And, you know, I think now it's got to the point where maybe there's still question marks over him going into next season, depending on where we are. But the reality is we've got 8 games to go and every Norwich fan is fully behind him between now and the end of May, hopefully, in terms of a playoff final.
The Norwich fans that I know that quite liked him as a person, but just not as a manager, and they seem to have all changed their tune. Now, obviously, 3-0 win for Norwich last time out against Stephen Schumacher's Stoke City side. Had to get that in there. You made it look comfortable. Has anything changed for that side during the international break? Is it still likely that Duffy will be out?
Yeah, I think he will be available for the game on Friday. Whether he'll come straight back in, of course, he has had kind of a 3 or 4 kind of week break, I suppose, in terms of injury. So probably a case of how match fit he is. And given we've kind of got the quick turnaround to Leicester, I could see him probably be more prominent in that one. Norwich at home tend to like to play kind of we've seen it at spells actually this season. Kenny McLean, who's naturally a midfielder, has gone on and played at centre-back, or Jakob Sorensen, who's also a midfielder by trade, has played centre-back because David Wagner kind of likes the ability they have with the ball to be able to help Norwich build up from the back and the passing ability. And that's probably where Duffy's weaknesses are. He's more of a head it, clear it, you lump balls into the box kind of defensive kind of player. I think I could see it being a Gibson Sorensen back too. So, yeah, in terms of Duffy's availability for Plymouth fans, probably unlikely to start. But yeah, nothing else really materially changing. We've got a few injuries. John Rowe, as I mentioned, Dimi Yiannoulis, Ono Hernandez. So we've got a few kind of wide options there and the left back that are out. But we are starting to look like kind of the more fully strength squad that we sort of have available to us now in more recent weeks.
Yeah, that's a shame. I really want Duffy to play because he was brilliant for us down at Home Park. So I was just trying to manifest some of that up at Carrow Road. Obviously, now known as Fortress Carrow Road, just to read some of the excellent stats from NCSC numbers, that Twitter account is brilliant. 6 home league wins in a row for Norwich City, the first time they've achieved that at the championship level for 18 years. 12 games unbeaten at Carrow Road for only the third time since 1994. 30 wins in the last 45 championship games there now, only 4 losses. How has Carrow Road become such a fortress? And do you see Argyle having any chance of getting anything?
Yeah, it's quite miraculous, really. You kind of go back to our last defeat against Blackburn in November and the apathetic feeling, the toxic nature around the ground. I honestly would never have believed that we'd be in this situation in the end of March, and Norwich haven't lost since. It's kind of been I think kind of the messaging from Wagner, the players, it's kind of to get, you know, the full support behind this squad, because everyone knew the quality they have. It's just it wasn't really working at the time. And to the credit, the Norwich fans have responded, and you know, the nature of the results ever since then have kind of speak volumes. It's been so crucial for where we are now, because our away form is poor, to be honest. I know we got the victory at Stoke last time out, but prior to that, we hadn't won at any away ground since the start of January. So that kind of shows you the contrast. I think if we'd have been going to Home Park, I'd have been slightly more fearful, as is kind of proven by the result earlier in the season. But at home, yeah, I think it's going to be a difficult afternoon for our goal. I suppose the fact that Norwich haven't lost at home for a while, there probably is one coming at some point between now and the end of the campaign. These sort of streaks are always sort of naturally have a conclusion. But I think given kind of the way they're playing and the couple of week break they've had, I think these players will be fully ready to probably try and, I suppose, get revenge a little bit on Plymouth. I think that's probably in their mindset.
Yeah, obviously, playoffs look a real possibility. I assume that's the sole aim now. And do you feel like that's possible?
Yeah, I think if you look at Norwich's kind of 8 games, we've got a couple of tough fixtures. The other side of Plymouth, we've got Leicester away, and then the East Anglian derby, which is sort of such a big game. I think anyone who knows Norwich's record in that fixture will be aware that there's more than just pride on kind of the plate. It is also a long run of 14, well, almost 15 years now since they last beat us. So that feels huge. But I think you get the other side of that, and Norwich have got lots of teams that are kind of in that mid-table, on the beach kind of territory. And I think they're the sort of fixtures where, given, you know, the quality of Zara that I mentioned and Sargent and those players, I think they're going to know what the aim is. They want to get in the Premier League to prove themselves. Some of them haven't played there before, some have. So I think they've got enough in the tank. I think Coventry would have been my slight concern, but given the FA Cup kind of taking centre stage a little bit for them now, I think there's a distraction there. And and Hull have been a little bit inconsistent in recent weeks. Norwich feel like that team that you kind of always get that, that kind of peaks at a certain point and then steamrolls themselves into the playoffs. And I kind of think, you know, this season that might be us.
Yeah, a little quick fire question for you then. Would you rather sneak into or get into the playoffs and Ipswich go up automatically, or miss out on the playoffs and Ipswich slip out down to the playoffs and miss out on promotion?
I think I'd have to probably still go for the latter, to be honest. It's one of them where they're very noisy. The reality is they've not played in the Premier League for a long time. We've, you know, got this sort of record over them. We've been in the top flight. So I think the idea of them having a successful season is pretty, would be a tough one to stomach. So, that would probably be just my pick. Of course, you know, being a Norwich fan, I'd hope, though, that that those statistics won't have to worry and we do go up and through the playoffs and they don't go up at all. That would be the perfect scenario.
Yeah, just going to finish up on a question for the away day travellers then. Obviously, this is our first game at Carrow Road since the 14th of March 2009. I don't need to tell you this, Adam. You already know this. Obviously, Ashley Barnes started up front for us that day. Alan Gow was on the pitch for yourselves, a 1-0 win for the Yellows with David Mooney on the score sheet, the name I had to look up. Obviously, Norwich has a fantastic array of pubs, but where do the away fans tend to go now? But obviously, I'm aware they're like the Queen of the Ice Scene and the Coach of Horses, the complete angler have all had their history and home fans only. So where do you recommend going?
Yeah, I'd say Norwich did have a spell where they allowed a music venue more really in terms of the waterfront being open for away fans. I'm not sure how that operates these days, whether that's still the case. But I mean, if not, venture into the city centre, you'll find sort of two more Wetherspoons, the Glass House and the Bell Hotel, both of which will be perfect locations, and they'll allow away fans, or you know, I think anywhere in the city centre really, you could find pubs that would be more open. But yeah, those three you mentioned, yeah, probably best not to try, because I think you'll get a response that you maybe won't like.
Yeah, I do love how Norwich is full of lovely pubs, and you've given us a list of Wetherspoons. I absolutely love that. Cheers, Adam. Thank you for your time. Appreciate that. Where can people find your content and your interview with me if they really want to see that?
We're the Pinken, pretty much anywhere sort of on terms of socials at Pinken, and you'll find us. We've of course got a YouTube channel, so lots of sort of preview content. We're sort of we're more sort of a journalistic kind of organization, so we speak to the management, so you'll get all the sort of build up in terms of David Wagner's thoughts on our YouTube channel. We'll be speaking to the managers post-match, so if you want to hear Ian Foster's thoughts, depending on I suppose the result, that should be available across our platforms. There's plenty of good stuff, interviews. And we're also, if you're in Norwich and you're at the game on Friday, you could head into one of the local supermarkets or convenience stores, and you'll be able to pick up the EDP and you can pull in the Pinken supplement. Lots of sort of match preview stuff that might be worth a read ahead of the big game on Friday.
Cheers, mate. Appreciate that.
No worries at all. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely seamless. Nobody noticed that massive hiccup in the middle whatsoever.
Pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah. Just pretend that didn't happen and I'll squirrel away in the background. John, answer a question. How do you see us lining up on Friday?
Don't know, actually. Hadn't really thought too much about it. Oh, now I'm huge. I suspect, you know, the usual first names on the team sheet will be in there. So Mumba is unavailable through suspension, right? And obviously JB has gone back, as we discussed previously. Forshaw, I think, is fit by the sound of it. That was the kind of briefing coming out today, I believe. So that will be good if it's true. obviously, Adam Forshaw played once in this fixture already this season and lost 6-2. So I'm sure he's ready to concede 6 goals again in this game. I do think we look a lot better when he plays. I think we look a lot steadier, a lot calmer. Certainly up at Blackburn, which I think was the last time he played. He really just pinged the ball around very nicely when there just seemed to be a desperate lack of imagination in the rest of our play. So if he's fit, you know, I think given that it's a big game, that it's his former club, I'd expect him to go back in. And probably I feel like it might be sort of a Jordan Houghton game more than an Adam Randall one, potentially. But hard to say. Obviously, I think they're both players who bring a lot to the team. So, but I think it might be Houghton and Forshaw if I had to guess. suspect Cooper will retain his place unless he's being punished for goading the fans into anti-Foster chanting at the end of the Preston game, allegedly, which now feels like a million years ago. But no, I fully expect to see Cooper in goal. And then I could see it being a Pleguezuelo game in terms of the back three. Then probably Gibson in the middle to deal with the sort of aerial threat of Barnes, and then probably Galloway, especially given that he's had a couple of weeks off. Or has Galloway been on international duty or not? See, we're all very prepared on this podcast.
That was going to be my next question, is how many of these are going to be affected by international duty? Because I know Galloway only played yesterday, late yesterday, obviously by the time he flies. I can't imagine there's direct flights from Zimbabwe to Norwich. It might be. I don't know.
There aren't direct trains from London to Norwich, so I think the odds of there being direct.
It might be one in which we rotate. I don't know.
Yeah. I think if Galloway has been heavily involved on international duty, I haven't followed the travails of the Zimbabwe international team. Although I did follow the travails of Ben Wayne missing a penalty. Just to quickly note that this week for New Zealand. I could see in that case probably Phillips. I mean, he's been away as well, right, with England, but England youth categories. But obviously is a lot younger and has less of an injury track record than Galloway. So I could see him being in as well. Probably Pleguezuelo, Gibson and Gallatin and Phillips in some configuration. And then do we know if Miller is injured or fit? He obviously limped off in the...
Not that I've seen. I think so.
And I think he's not suspended, is he, Miller? Because his yellow card, which should have been a red in the Preston game, I think came after the cutoff for getting suspended for 5/10 yellow cards. So I think he's avoided that fate. But yeah, I don't know if he's fit or not. He seems to be a Foster favourite, so I'd anticipate that he would start if he's available. Sorry. And then. In behind the striker is a bit of a hard one to call, but beyond obviously Whittaker and Hardy, the sort of third of that triumvirate, given that JB is unavailable. Could see Devine put in, but seems to have fallen a little bit out of favour in recent weeks and hasn't really pulled up trees either.
Moving on to some score predictions, as obviously Finn's dropped off and decided to leave. John, I think we'll call it there after those. How many times are you expecting to hear Samba?
Oh yeah, I mean, if this is a great silver lining, we are going to lose 8 or 9-0, isn't it? Because Samba de Janeiro is probably one of the best pieces of goal music in the Football League. Do they still play that?
Yeah, I believe so. It actually is. I'm not even it is class.
And as someone who is including a television watch along. Previously had to hear the Captain Pugwash theme tune at Fleetwood 10 times in three seasons. Twice in the flesh, once on TV. It'll be nice to hear a piece of goal music that isn't the theme music to a children's television program of fairly old vintage, although Captain Pugwash was also class, to be fair. Score prediction, I don't know. I really, really just want to believe that we'll score a goal, but I don't think we will. I think they're in very good nick at the moment, and I will lose 2-0. Regrettably, as I was saying earlier, it really wouldn't surprise me if we go there, put in a pretty creditable, yet ultimately nowhere near getting anything performance, and then don't turn up against Bristol City whatsoever. That just sort of seems to be the way of things a bit at the moment. So I'll say 2-0 to Norwich.
Go on, Finn. Give us your score predictions. If you unmute yourself, that helps. There we go. Oh,
yeah. Hey, going well this live stream. I would say, I mean, I made a comment earlier that I said I don't think we're going to get fresh in this game. However, for whatever reason, I've just had a sort of thought in my head for the last few days that we're going to lose 4-0 or 4-1. So I think I'm going to go 4-1. We're actually going to score this time. And we're going to, I reckon what's going to happen is we are going to sort of 2-1 with 10 minutes to go for it and then concede 2 late goals on the counter. So let's go that 4-1.
You know what we haven't had in a while is a good ironic goal celebration. So I take, you know, a sort of pointless consolation goal at 4-0 down in the 88th minute just so we can all go absolutely mental in the away end. Because that can be fun. Mm. We haven't, you know, having been a serious football club that have been in most games in recent memory, we haven't really had a lot of opportunity to do that. So maybe Friday will be the day.
Yeah, I think I can't remember what I said on my interview on the Pinken. If you want to go and watch that, I'm not sure why you would. It's just me waffling about Norwich and places in that I've been. So just basically,
you've been to places in Norwich.
yeah. Anyway, just trying to get the word Norwich in as much as I can to play up to the stereotype. I can't remember if I said 3-1 or 4-1, so I'll go 3-1. And I think I said Shane Duffy to put it in his own net because he was easily our best player down at Home Parks, and maybe he'll reward us again with a good performance for us. I think we'll call that a night. This has gone incredibly smoothly. No hiccups at all whatsoever. Look forward to editing the audio version so it doesn't sound mental. I think that's about it. Should we call it a night? Unless there's anything you lot want to talk about? No? All right. Still far too many of you watching along for this mess. Make sure you follow us and like and subscribe and all of that stuff. Go find us on TikTok and all that stuff you young people do. And we are going live post Norwich. There's a new host, thank God. Hopefully they can sort this mess out. And yeah, there's a few newbies jumping on over the next few days. We're going live post Norwich and Bristol City. We're not going to merge it into one Easter weekend pod like we were going to. Yeah, see you later.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.